Welcome back in our podcast, Legal Ops Insiders, a podcast about everything related to legal operations aimed at heads of legal, general counsel, legal ops leaders, and everyone interested in improving or enabling legal services delivery. In this episode, we have Job Wijbinga. He has extensive experience and he's going to talk about building a legal tech roadmap that works in the age of AI. Hectic times. Job, first of all, can you introduce yourself to the listeners?
For sure. So thanks for handing over the mic, Willem. Thanks for inviting me over, Willem, as well, Jan Willem. It's nice to be here. I'm a legal director at Friesland Campina. Friesland Campina is one of the biggest dairy companies in the world. And there I head up legal ops, so the topic of today, but as well a number of business groups and what happens there within the legal domain. I'm responsible there for the teams which are located predominantly in Asia and in Africa. Previously, I've been with Coca-Cola, and there I was involved as well in the topic of legal ops. Maybe we'll speak about that in the near future. And I started my career in private practice. There I started as a lawyer in private practice, multiple law firms for 7.5 years. Thank you.
Job, when you were at Coca-Cola, was it already called legal operations back then or not yet?
It's a good question, Jan Willem. No, back then it was not mentioned legal ops. So I think both you and I, and I'm looking at my neighbor here at the other side of the table as well. So we were all involved in the topic, yep. But it was not yet called legal ops.
Absolutely not. People were stepping into legal technology because they felt that this was the way and the future, the way forward, and started just doing things. Now, today's topic is about a legal tech roadmap. What is a legal tech roadmap and why do we need it, Job?
A roadmap is really a simple plan which is summarizing the key focus areas that you want to accomplish in a period of time that you defined as a team. So why do you need that? Well, you need it because you need focus. You cannot accomplish everything. It's always depending on resources. It's depending on adoption, multiple things that we're going to talk about in the next 30 minutes or so.
Great. You need focus. Is it a document that you refer to every now and then, or is it a document that your team members, if they don't have the time, refer to when working on legal tech or on supporting the business?
Yeah, and is it a dynamic document? That would also be a question.
That's a good question, I would say, Jan Willem, and as well Willem. So let me try to come back on those three questions in one answer, which will be, of course, challenging.
This is not an interrogation, have you?
No, I hope to learn from you guys as well here. So let's share the mic here. But is it a dynamic document? I would say yes, for sure, but not so dynamic ideally. So the same as goes to a strategy, you're not going to change your strategy every month because otherwise it would not make sense. So that's the same for a legal tech roadmap. Actually, and I'll give you a practical example. So at Friesland Campina, where I'm working now, we're doing that like every 3 years or so. Mm-hmm. And the need to change it is driven, well, a like strategy because you have accomplished several things, or the need to change it because driven by what's happening in the outside world. Let's talk about AI, for instance. Is that a document which your team members will pick from time to time to explain what they're doing? Yes, for sure, because it's a starter to drive your KPIs. You want to measure what you can measure to make it realistic, to make it smart, of course. So for sure, that's connected to such a document. Are we picking it from time to time? Yes, for sure, because it's an engagement document as well. Mm-hmm. You want to accomplish something. At Coca-Cola, when I was working a lot with people from the UK, they always talked about big, hairy, audacious goals. That should be in there to some extent as well, I would say. And so it's an engaging document as well, engaging people on what they would like to accomplish, but then still within the time which is available within the focus that there is.
Excellent. Very impressive. I hear really something that brings together people, metrics, data, probably also processes, something we're going to talk about later.
And what about budget, Job? Is there a budget? Do you have a budget related to the plan, or is that created ad hoc? How does that work?
Of course, I can only talk about my own experience. Eh? And I would say that there is no such thing as a solid roadmap for every single team. Ours does not contain a budget. However, it is fully aligned with IT, so with IT architects, with our IT business partners. So together with them, we have built it, and we are constantly renewing it.
Okay.
Very interesting, because that's probably where part of the budget comes from. But also, I would then think you need to justify your focus on legal tech sometimes by saying no to the business. And then say, hey guys, your internal clients, your internal stakeholders, say, hey guys, we agreed on a strategic roadmap, legal tech roadmap for the legal department. It's a bit slower these months now that we are implementing contract automation or contract lifecycle management, if you wish. Is that correct?
Yeah, for sure. It goes back again to the point I just addressed. It is bringing focus. You cannot accomplish everything because there are simply happening a lot of things in the legal market. Let's talk about AI for a second there. So let's make one step to the side. There is so much happening, so much buzz going on in terms of AI that some of like team members or business stakeholders, they are fully enthusiastic and would like to try out everything or would like to buy everything because simply they think that everything will be better at the end. But that's a good discussion, I think, for this episode as well. What a legal tech roadmap brings to me is actually not so much tech. It's the discussion on a process, and it's discussing what is going wrong or what are pain points actually, and can we solve them? And is tech then the right solution for that? And then the next step is which tech? So is that, so I'm working for a multinational, so there is already tech widely available. Could that then, in the case that tech would be solving a problem, could that solve the problem to like 80% or 90%? Without needing to buy external, flashy, new solutions.
Yeah, Job, I think that's spot on. I mean, that's the way to look at it. What do you actually need there? And what do you want to pay for it? And what do you achieve? That's very healthy. Tech vendors, Willem, are tending to oversell, of course. Their product can do everything. And what it does, it's really good. And you can do this and you can do that. But maybe you don't need all that. Eh? You want a specific solution for a specific problem. And I think that's what I see happening also with my clients, that they get more conscious about that. They understand there's also not one solution for everything. You might need multiple solutions, and that is actually not a bad thing. I mean, they always also think that is complicated, and then I have not one discussion with IT, but then I have 10 discussions with IT. Lawyers are... In-house lawyers are hesitant about that type of discussions. It's not part of their daily work. That's why it's, of course, the role of legal ops manager evolves. And that's good, because then you can get the focus and really look for the solutions that you actually need.
Very interesting. I wouldn't sort of sell all features, because what I like most in working together with our customers is to develop, to make our solution better and actually, of course, fit it then in the use cases that the customer brings forward. So a roadmap, I would assume, also addresses legal tech vendors, or how do you see working together with legal tech vendors, Job?
it results ultimately, if you make the choice, so back to my previous remark, if you make the choice on engaging external vendors and not the existing vendors, which are already the predominant vendors in your company, then it results engaging, of course, with external vendors. And to the point of Jan Willem, I think that's indeed what's happening. So many of us, and what I mean with us is in-house counsel, in-house departments, are getting blown away by the magnitude, the number of external vendors which is there on the market, and they. That's maybe not fair to say in front of Willem being an external vendor in under that definition here as well. But they tend indeed sometimes to overpromise until you have seen really deep demos of solutions. And then it turns out, for example, that you're actually talking about case management and that there are other case management solutions already widely available which can do the trick as well for 80%.
Yeah.
So that's a thing really going on. And personally, I'm enthusiastic as well by a number of players on the market, which are giving some clarity in that overview of legal vendors. So in the Netherlands, we've got that Dutch legal tech overview, but there are plenty of those, including paid ones, like the Gardeners of this world, where you can pay, I think, as a vendor as well, your price or point on that overview. So that's always a little bit commercially driven, but it makes sense in the wood of different solutions to bring to shine a little bit of light there.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I think we have never engaged much with legal tech maps. I've never chased that really, and I should have done that probably. But what I find interesting is you have people in the team who are eager to go and, yeah, we should do this as well. We should do that as well. And you temper them and you say, no, but we might try it. And then, of course, you need to have the engagement of members in your team. And you are probably very enthusiastic to feed those who have the energy and who want to go. So to some extent, I would say you would always have people in your team that you have some budgets for. Oh, well, okay, you can do, you can try the co-pilot, or you can try this or that to see how it works. Because to some extent, what I see is you need the learnings in your team, and you need to encourage that in the right way, of course, facilitate that in the right way, while at the same time keeping an eye on those who are lagging, who will come last in a way, where the change management comes in. Job.
The sandbox.
Yes.
The sandbox where they can play with legal tech.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Ideally, you should do that and fully agree, Willem. Yes, we are doing that in the same manner. Yes, we are piloting AI tools. And I mean the word piloting, because piloting it is, and it should be. So some of the pilots should be small, and there are always bigger topics. So again, it's all about focus. It's all about carefully planning resources. It's about engagement as well, like we all addressed at the start of this podcast. And how can you keep on people keeping motivated? That's by trying out new things as well. So there's a lot on the market. You should try out things because you don't want to miss out either. But again, it always comes back on, do we have problems? And is there a way to solve it? And is tech the right solution to solve it?
And then you come, what I see as one of the big factors for huge failures in adoption is that the organization is ultimately not ready for digital enablement, if you wish. Here's the classic discussion about you need to be mature at data, processes, and people. If you have the enthusiastics in the team, you should encourage them, of course. And if they are less active, the more lagging people in the team, you would need to build capacity in the team, so that there's always someone walking around in a way to highlight the features that are available in the existing tools, to support and address the problems so as to get those laggards more on board.
Well, and it's not just the team, it's also the other users in the company. And as soon as they start responding enthusiastically, that is a big motivation also for the legal team. And so if they discover that the tool is actually really working and that the client, the internal client, is happy with it, that's usually the moment that it really starts flying, is my experience.
So but that basically asks for a sort of a communication plan or a stakeholder engagement plan, probably as part of your legal tech roadmap. Jorp, how do you do that?
Yeah, it's a good discussion. It's solution by solution, I would say, that you need to build that. A couple of thoughts. And Jan-Willem, I'm keen to hear your thoughts here as well, because this is what you guys are specialized in, of course, as well. But two thoughts from my end. One from my previous role at Coca-Cola, where I was leading actually a CLM rollout, and one about a recent workshop I had from Tesco, a company in the UK. So first on Coca-Cola, there, Willem, to your plan. So what we did is we went out to the market and we bought ourselves a CLM solution. But then we actually found out that we were not clear enough upfront on actually the user requirements. So that led to quite some spend in terms of a consultant coming in and helping us out to find out what our actual user requirements were. And of course, IT was in there. We built a communication plan. We had a project team and so forth and so forth. And it was insufficiently, ultimately, interconnecting with existing other solutions. So it led to a sort of a one-stop solution then for CLM, which was not what we wanted up front. So this is an example of that things can actually go wrong if you don't think ahead and if you don't carefully plan ahead on which kind of stakeholders you need and what you are actually really really addressing. Bridge to Tesco. So what I learned from Tesco, which is of course a very big big in-house team that that the guys have, so they learned in a similar way, and actually that led to a decision to hire a change management manager who only has one role, and that's change management in the legal team only. And that shows that every single in-house team, which is busy with implementation of tech or selection of tech, more than half of it is about change management. It's about changing the capabilities of your team members. It's about changing current workflows, current processes. And then you come across laggards and you come across people who are fully engaged. But you need to ultimately convince everyone, including your internal stakeholders who are using or indirectly using your solutions. Because at the end, in-house departments are supporting departments, and they support just like an HR department, just like a procurement department, they support internal processes. And hence, if you don't have a happy customer, you did not conduct your work in a proper way. So, Willem, keen to hear your thoughts on that one.
Happy. As soon as you start changing things, there will be people unhappy. That is inevitable because they were so used to a certain way of working, sometimes also having to do with their status, because that was their job. And the solution is something that might change the job, and people might not like that, but you cannot change that. That's just a fact that you also have to manage, of course, in change management.
It's really, I mean, the issue of adoption is one of the biggest, I would say. And your approach to addressing this really goes about over several parameters. If you're not ready, then we understand from Gartner, with whom we collaborate very closely, then 77% is geared to failure, to full failure. So
you cannot underestimate the need for repetitive training. And that's also for new people coming in, for example, because everybody assumes that they will blend in automatically and start using whatever tool they have the way they should. But repeated training also by the vendors. I mean, use the vendors for that, I think. They know best what their product can do. And show it to people so that they are constantly exposed to to the way of working the system and so forth.
I think
that is that's really underestimated and not done. There's never enough budget for that.
I fully agree with that, but I think it's important to keep encouraging your power users and those who are the enthusiast front runners in a way, and keep feeding them, open up features that you will close down for casual users or for more the laggards who seek a sort of simple interface or so. And that's, of course, what your legal tech should support. And leadership is then really needed to drive adoption. And there you see a lot of hesitation. It's relatively modern to say I'm a servant leader. So I serve my team. I'm a supportive leader who listens to team members, where the reality to some extent is that you have to take measures that prevent avoiding the legal tech. So and those are unpopular measures, and that you need to not be careful in first seeing some results, but have to reach out to IT and say, we have to have these API connectors, because that makes it easier. That encourages people to actually step into the solution. In our case, we agree, of course. Job, you are urging to add something.
No, I actually have a question here. So I'm intrigued by the fact here, when we're talking about legal tech, you're often pre-investing, and we're talking now about leadership and how leadership addresses this, and the fact that you need to approach your IT department. So this is pre-investing before you are showing the value which is coming from a legal tech solution. So do you guys have any thoughts on that or any recommendations here? Maybe Willem from the perspective of being a vendor, and Jan-Willem from the perspective of adoption and rolling out solutions.
I think it's, if you go for with a big vendor, then you run the risk that you work with an implementation partner who are really sort of distant from the development process. So the flexibility that you may need and that you may want to learn together is one where you work together with a vendor that is actually co-developing with you. For us, for what I have seen, it's very enthusing to work together with a customer and build a spectacular use case and actually see that it's happening and then hear the feedback. I've had a year ago that I went to a customer of ours in Reims, in France, and I thought, I'm coming here for a testimonial. We ended up with a somewhat, it's not awkward, but we ended up with 3 hours listing all the things that needed to improve. And then we built those. And that's really nice to see that then in the next period, you see that it is actually picked up. That makes me very enthusiastic. We've had advanced approval workflow tooling with a customer who saw that they lost a lot of time in their processes on seeking consensus, and there were many, many people involved. So what they wanted was for all kind of types of business that they did and for which they needed to involve people internally, they built full-blown approval workflows. And they came, it needed to be triggered by Q&A questions. It needed to be triggered on the template level, parallel running approval workflows. We want to have first a sanitary check on the questionnaire, because we don't want to bother the seniors with half-filled in questionnaire and those things. And then when we had built it together with them, they realized those approvers need to discuss it with each other. So we need to have a discussion option alongside. Now, I found it so nice to develop all this. It's very nice if you have a customer that is responsive to immediately follow up on that. And that's what we now also see with AI, where the larger customers or the larger multinationals don't know exactly what to do, but they do know what their problems are, and they feel that AI can solve it. And that's actually true. So that's my reaction. Jan-Willem.
Yeah, well, I think I agree with that. And I think, Job, you asked about the value. So how do we make clear what the value is? And I always say, yeah, it's a business case also. And that's also usually for lawyers far from their bed. they are not used to making business cases because they're lawyers, of course. It makes sense. But if you want to prove the business that you think this is a good idea, that you want this, that there should be investment in this, then a business case is the way to do it. And it is very healthy to think that way and actually make a business case. So what does it cost? What does it save? And really have a good deep thought on that in detail, because that very much is important for the success in the end of the solution that you choose.
Nice. It's a sort of a search for use cases in a way. How does that work, Job? How do you encourage your team and probably the business to come up with use cases where they see this is a bottleneck in our processes? This is where the CLM, for example, we're going to talk about CLM separately, but where in a CLM we have too poor data over here. We need to be more flexible, and we need more data, for example, that you have to agree on in a contract, and that you want to have on the surface. What that you don't want to have revenue leakage, as this is called.
Yeah, two things. So on a yearly basis, we're making our action plans as our global legal ethics and compliance team. So I'm talking now from Friesland Campina perspective, in-house. So then you are addressing, of course, the needs and the most urgent needs of every single team. Mm-hmm. And you're making decisions there on what needs most of the resources and most of the attention, so what needs to be solved. But a good example that's really recent, we are, of course, experimenting with AI. Again, so going back to the pilot. And there we've had some help as well from external trainers, for example, or facilitators, really helping out on building those use cases. So what we did, two things that really made an impression on me as well, personally, last year. So first, we did use case building with our corporate legal team members. And then people started building their own solutions, so like their own agents in AI. But we did a similar exercise together with an external trainer on all the international teams when we were together earlier this year at an international convention that we always have once per year. And that really led to a lot of engagement and really nice results. So this is really important, I would say, to get that true focus in and to get that engagement in, and then to decide on small pilots that you can take action on, which are realistic, where you can take action.
What I see with the least successful customers of ours is that they have a growing team. So their legal team doubles in size, and then basically they fail almost completely in adoption. The thing is that this is a sort of hiring of people by complaint, and where you do intuition-based hiring, where you feel we need more people and you can convince your budget holder.
This still happens a lot, Willem. I see this regularly happen.
Sorry, then?
Yeah. The solution is simply more people. We are so busy, we need more people. It's still a Pavlov reaction, basically.
Yeah, to some extent, it's also driving the testosterone levels, that you have a large team or so with you.
Well, I even saw business cases there that they said, we stop with this tool that saves us license money, and then we can hire someone. Yeah.
But I want to bridge it. I want to bridge it to the
other way around.
Yeah,
But I've seen this happening. And really, the least successful customers are those with high growth legal teams. But the point that I wanted to make is, when you define your use cases, of course you find engagement, and you would do that in Asia and Africa, somewhat not around the corner, not the people that you speak every day, or only over Teams or so. But what? If you prioritize use cases, you want to do that over where's the pain the largest.
Yes.
So you want to decide on the basis of metrics that you know. I have the numbers in the system that show me you are busy. And I see in the metrics that the CLM generates that this is a slow process for which we need a solution.
Yeah, that's actually a very nice point. You can see that it's making me enthusiastic. So what we did actually in the session I was just referring to is we did an exercise creating two axes. And one X was on the resource, and one was on the impact that it was making. So we came with ultimately in a session with resulted in 30 business cases or so. Mm-hmm. So quite a lot. And we grouped them in, well, the different areas of the legal work and the legal processes. But then we put them really on those axes. So in which box can we put them?
Yeah.
So that you really designate the quick wins that you can do yourself, for example. Mm-hmm. Because now in the generic AI solutions, I think that's working already pretty well, where you can, as legal counsel, already come up with a couple of solutions. And for others, they are so designated, but they can make a lot of impact. So there you probably need other suppliers, which are very specialized and which are already on the market. So that can definitely help.
So data is an important element, or at the very least, you plot your use cases on a on a, what is it? How much people do we have? How much time do we have? Versus what is the impact if we automate this, or is it automatable at all?
And the money pits. And
okay, I think we talked about a lot of things. A last topic that I would want to raise before we wrap up this episode is what do you do in terms of capacity building? A legal tech roadmap, of course, demands that you support the legal tech as you manage your outside counsel, as you manage your law firms, and you know if you're on top of managing your lawyer, you will be able to save quite a bit of money. For legal tech, I would say if you are on top of your legal tech enablement, then you need to focus on your change management process, where I think change managers are very welcome. But how do you see that with other roles coming in, new defined roles that are sort of part of your legal tech roadmap job?
It's an interesting one, because at this moment that we're recording this episode, we're actually again discussing the strategy of the next 3 years in Friesland Campina. Mm-hmm. I just made a presentation, I think, last week on what I think that the future will look like, and of course not based on what I think, but as well on reports. And I think that two things will happen. So at the bottom, I would say, of each in-house team, there will be more and more digitization on really the repetitive tasks that mm-hmm. can be changed into to digital solutions to make more speed. So you will grow as a result more and more into like senior business partners, which is already the case. So that trend is already there, but it will, well, the pace will probably change because of the pace of AI coming in now, as we've seen last year. And I see you looking at Jan-Willem, so keen to hear your thoughts on that as well, on whether you agree or disagree. And the second trend would be that most probably you will need a little bit less of external advice, because the tools which used to be available only for external law firms, which are very specialized, they become more and more available for in-house teams. And in-house teams are closer to the business, so they speak the language of a company better. And they, if they are doing their job right, so they can translate that earlier into a real solution. So you probably need to spend only time with external law firms if it's really, really needed for the really top specialist advice.
Yeah, because it's not just the tools, it's especially the knowledge that becomes general available. That's, of course, the big change, I think.
The democratization of knowledge, yes.
Yeah.
Very impressive. I must say we have a lengthy podcast episode this time, Job.
Sorry for that.
No, this is it's most inspiring for me. I hope the people who listen to the episode are as inspired as I am right now. If you have some new ideas on topics that we should discuss or that we have touched upon and should elaborate on, let us know. For this time, Job Wijbinga, thank you so much for being here. And in the next episode, we'll continue a discussion about CLM. For now, thank you very much for listening. Cheers.